Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, 2018 saw the most strikes and lockouts since 1986. Now, understand, last year was the year Janus versus AFSCME was decided by the Supreme Court, another assault on organized labor and organized workers. But here's the thing. Already this year, two major strikes. As I've been saying, it's going to get more frequent because people have had enough. They've had enough being treated like garbage. They've had enough stagnant wages. They've had enough decreasing health care and diminishing retirement benefits and diminished working conditions. Had enough. And we're reliving those moments in history where years of organizing are now taking hold, and people are finally saying, you know what? I've had enough already. And I look at what's going on in Denver right now as the Denver teachers had their second day on strike, obviously fighting for better wages, hours, and conditions, and also, I would argue, to save public schools. And here to talk a little bit about day two of the strike, I've asked Malia Mann to come talk with us. She's one of the Denver striking school teachers. Malia, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So walk me through this. Day two, what happened?
Yeah, so today we met at our individual schools for the morning and then collectively got together for the afternoon for a rally in the Capitol at Civic Center Park. And at 10 o'clock, our bargaining team sat down with the district, and they are, as far as I know, still working. It was around 6 that they went back on caucus. I'm not sure if they're going to come back this evening, but I know that we have a schedule for the strike tomorrow.
So day three possible. You know, we saw last year, West Virginia, Oklahoma, Arizona, we saw public sector workers in places like Kentucky. And, and this year you've got the teachers in Los Angeles and was North Carolina. There are places all over the country of people finally saying enough already. What's the breaking point here for you guys? Because, look, I know tons of teachers. Nobody wants to be on strike. They want to be in the classroom. But at some point, there's a breaking point. What was it for you guys?
Oh, truly. Yeah, none of us want to be on strike. My kids, they were very supportive of me, but it really pains me to be away from them. The breaking point was really the fact that the district is not listening. We've been going through negotiations for 15 months. And they waited until the last second to sit down and really take it seriously. And even then, they didn't show that they were taking it seriously. We told them exactly what we wanted. And then when the governor came and said, you guys are allowed to strike if you want to, we said, we'll wait until next Monday to strike. So we have time. This was last Wednesday. So we have time to negotiate. And after Friday and Saturday negotiations, the final district offer was the exact opposite of what we had just told them we wanted. And so I think it's really just this back and forth of us telling the district for the last 15 months, this is what we need. And then them saying, well, we think we know better.
Yeah. Some of the reports that I've read, and I've read a whole bunch of variety of stories on this, is trying to paint you guys as greedy teachers. You're just greedy teachers. you only work 9 months a year. You've got good health care. What more do you want?
Right, exactly. It's so frustrating because I've never met a person who's like, oh, you're a teacher, that must be so easy. Every single person I have met and said, oh, yeah, I teach middle school, they either go, oh, honey, or they go, wow, you are a brave soul.
And I'm in that category. Look, I've got 3 kids and I can barely handle them. I can't imagine I can't imagine 10 times that number.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So thank you for doing what you do. I mean, seriously, thank you for the work that you do, because it's vitally important to democracy, to our society, to the future of this country. And I think we don't give you guys enough credit for that. And I love one of the bumper stickers I see every once in a while. If you can read this, thank a teacher.
Yeah, I saw that sign a couple of times, and I saw some students that had made that were misspelled wrong. It said, if you keep not funding education, more signs will look like this. And it was just like all spelled incorrectly. So I really appreciate it. I mean, we've gotten so much support from the community. We've gotten so much support from our students. that I truly believe that we're going to come out on top, because everyone believes that education needs to be funded more.
Right.
Like nobody, no politician sits down and is like, oh no, I think we've done enough there.
Oh, I don't know. Here in Pennsylvania in 2010, we had a governor who slashed more than $1 billion from education for just that reason.
I do understand. So you mentioned North Carolina. I moved to Denver from North Carolina and was a part of the walkout there last year and had met with some state legislators. And when we went and told them, you know, like, we need more money, he goes, oh, but you're doing the Lord's work. And that was it. Like, no money, no, that was the end of the conversation. Like, okay.
So it's your fault. You brought it from North Carolina, right? Did you?
Okay, so I said this has been going on for 15 months, so it was definitely here before I got here.
I'm kidding with you. But here's the thing. So can we make the argument? Because, look, I think teachers are underpaid. I think they should demand more, better wages, better benefits, all of that. How much do you think of it comes down to sexism? Because teachers are overwhelmingly women, and you know, oh, you're doing the Lord's work, or you know, you're doing the nurturing, or it's been framed in a way that, you know, it's women's work. It's what you're supposed to do. You shouldn't want to make a living doing it.
Yeah. So me personally, I don't know that DCTA has any stance on this at all, but I can tell you what I'm only a man, how I feel about that. Is I think that's really evident in the maternity leave policies, which is there are none, you know, for teachers. In North Carolina, we didn't have any. Here, we don't have any. There's a pool that you can enter into to, like, pull from the sick leave pool where other teachers donate days so that, you know, these women can have children and stay home with them. You have to take short-term disability to have a child as a teacher, which I personally find insulting.
Yeah, that's bizarre. But again, it goes back to, you know, what I said at the beginning. This is about, you know, it's the misogyny. I mean, we don't have policies that help women who have careers and also want to have a family. And to me, it's you know, as one of the only industrialized countries in the world to not have a paid family leave or paid maternity or paternity laws, I think we're falling behind everybody else.
Yeah. I can agree with you on that. All of my friends who are teachers try to plan having children around the summer, which makes sense, so you don't have to lose out on any money. But if there was any sort of, you know, reasonable maternity leave, it would be so much easier for our teachers.
So let's get back to the strike for a minute, because, you know, again, you know, it's been framed in every article that I read. It's about the money. I mean, your wages are,
you know,
somewhere in the lower end of the middle to lower end of the scale across the country.
Yeah, we're 34th. According to, I believe it was USA Today, but the Denver housing market is 12th in the nation. It's ridiculous. I was speaking with a first-year teacher today, and she was telling me she lives with her cousin because she can't afford rent in Denver. She said $800 is the most she could pay. You cannot find an apartment, even like a third bedroom, like Harry Potter under the cupboard that is, apartment in Denver for $800 a month. We can't afford to live in the communities we work in. And that's really what this is coming down to, I believe, is we work extremely hard, really more than 10 months a year, all year long, and we can't afford to live here.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem. So when you see these stories come out, wow, it's just about the money. It's the money. And look, you do need to exist, especially when you look at the fact that you guys spend a good portion of your income where you shouldn't have to, on school supplies and on things for students.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, all of this stuff has to be part of the conversation that that goes into this.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it's really frustrating when people are just trying to paint us in this picture of, like, we're being greedy. And I really think it is the minority who does that, because especially here, I've had parents texting me all day, students coming out to strike with me with their parents, like, the people here, I in Denver at least, I truly don't feel believe that. I did speak to one person when I was getting lunch today who was like, said that we are being selfish. An editorial was written by a man who came to the school that I work at, Denver Discovery School, and took pictures of us striking and said that we were being greedy and we weren't giving the bonus system a chance. But it really, I mean, the issue is you don't pay teachers enough, and therefore teachers are leaving. They're getting different jobs where they're being paid fairly for the education they have.
Yeah, the bonus
system? Most of the teachers in my, so that's what they was, pro comp is like getting bonuses for certain things. So you have like a base pay, and then, so that's what Denver had been operating under previous, or still today.
So is that tied to the standardized tests?
Some of it is. I honestly, because I'm a social studies teacher and it's not a tested subject. I am not as familiar with it, but I know that you get a bonus if your students grow on CMAS. So that's the Colorado standardized testing. But I don't know like which specific tests are linked to the bonuses. But I do know it has to do with student performance, student growth, school performance. If your school is a high need school, and part of the issue is like how those things are defined. Like I know one of the issues that DCTA has with giving more money to the high need schools is that who's defining what's a high need school? Who's being excluded from that group? So we believe that if you give more money to base pay, you have a more consistent and reliable set of teachers who know what they're getting paid and feel comfortable staying in education. Whereas right now, Denver is losing 20-30% of its teachers a year.
Wow.
We are hiring about 1,000 new teachers. When I went to new teacher orientation, it was in this huge auditorium and there were 1,000 people there.
That's not good. That's not good. I mean, where's the stability?
It's not.
Well, I mean, I look at my kids' school, and you know, they know from year to year that, you know, Miss So and So is going to be there, and my kids had Miss So and So, and you know, my oldest had it, and my youngest is looking forward. There's a consistency there that I can't imagine having the kind of turnover that you're talking about, having any of that consistency.
My school alone has lost almost half of its staff during the school year, which, to me, coming from a school in rural North Carolina, that's unheard of. Most of the teachers had been there for 20, 30 years. But it's so common here that teachers are churning through the system throughout the school year that it's like commonplace to these kids. And a lot of these kids have experienced real trauma, have attachment disorders, and they're seeing these teachers come and go. And it's hard for them to even value their education when the adults are not.
Yeah, it's that wow, that's so screwy. So where do you see things going here? I mean, you know, look, as I've been reading, you know, you guys seem to be kind of far apart. How long do you see this going? Where's the resolve level? I'm curious how you see this playing out.
So from what I was watching with bargaining today, I was there for the majority of the day. Both sides clearly want this to end. I can't see that either side really has a motivation for keeping a strike going, which is why I'm so perplexed by the lack of urgency I see coming from the district. I believe that we are making strides in the right direction. We had some really productive conversations about PDUs today, but I know that a lot of teachers are ready to hear more of a conversation, and the union is ready to hear more of a conversation about things other than PDUs. You know, I totally agree that it is super important to have that language explicitly clear.
What are PDUs?
So that, for professional development units, which is what they've spent most of today and last Friday and Saturday talking about, was teachers gaining monetary value out of their professional development units.
So the more education you have, the higher your wage structure should be.
Right. And the more district-provided education you're getting through the programs that we are taking part in over the summer, in our spare time, and during district professional development days.
It seems to me that the district would want to have people who would want to invest in their people to get them to stay so that you have that longevity, you have that lack of turnover, because I can't imagine it's cheap to constantly train new teachers and go through the whole new hire process. I can't imagine that's cost effective either.
Yeah, I would think not. I know that I spoke with like two or three different HR representatives when I was going through the hiring process. Here is really complex. But I totally agree. I think it makes way more sense to allocate your funds towards retaining teachers who can be in a school for more than 1 or 2 years, like staying in schools, having true community schools where you have teachers who have taught your older siblings, perhaps even your parents after a while. Like, that's truly what we need to give our students that consistent education, is veteran teachers who are masters at their craft and are being rewarded for that mastery.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You have to actually respect teachers to want to get to that point. And it seems as a country right now, and you can disagree if you want to, that we don't seem to respect teachers. I mean, a lot of people I know say, well, anyone can be a teacher. It doesn't, you know, you just right. stand up there, and I'm going, no, not anyone can. And I don't want just anyone.
Yeah.
And that there's the frame of the bad teacher. You can never get rid of a bad teacher. And I'm going, no. That's not true. And I've never really yeah. had a bad teacher. I've had some that were less inspiring, but I've had some mm-hmm. that were transformative.
Yeah. And you hear those stories all the time. You hear kids talking about teachers that truly changed their lives. I mean, almost like every adult I've spoken to has had one teacher that they can tell you about that made a huge impact on their lives. And I don't think it's a just now issue with respecting education. It's been historically throughout our country's history a struggle for teachers to be respected. And I don't really understand that, since we have such a huge impact on our society, on our culture, on literally every part of U.S. culture. It just makes no sense to me. Everyone has a teacher that either inspired them or changed them in some way, and you would think that we would be respected more than that.
Yeah. Oh, look. Yeah. I mean, there are some that, you know, I think back to my government teacher. I talk about him all the time, and it's been, well, close to 100 years since I had him. So, so it's just, there are some people that were like that. We want more of those people, but we also want them mm-hmm. to stay, and we want them to hone their
yes.
craft and also to be well compensated, so that they can, have to work a second or third job, or not sleep yeah. on a friend or a relative's couch.
Yeah. My husband and I were looking at buying a home, and we just truly can't afford it. Even with dual income living here, it's so expensive in Denver.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Friends who want to start families and they don't feel comfortable in the position that they're in starting a family. I have a couple other friends who were afraid to go on strike because they have small children and they were afraid that they would not be able to put food on the table.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, you're in a position where you have to, because, you know, if things don't change now, it's only going to get worse down the road. And that's the problem. I've always been someone who believes you got to have the strike arrow in your quiver. You don't always mm-hmm. reach for it first, and you hope you
yeah.
never need it, but you better damn well hope it's there when you do. And I think you guys are at that point.
Oh, I agree. The sign I was walking around with today said, when you can't afford to strike, it's time to strike.
So let me ask you a last question. What can we do to help? What
okay.
what do you want people doing in this moment? How can we help with this?
So one thing that we've really been pushing is calling the school board. We have been reaching out to local officials, really just garnering support. And I would say even reach out in your own communities. I mean, this is a nationwide issue. Reach out to your local school board. Heck, most people don't even know who's sitting on their school board. Do a little bit of research. See who is sitting on your school board, what they believe in, maybe who their competitors are in the next upcoming school board election, and really pay attention to who's in charge of your child's education.
And hopefully it's the teachers and the parents and not bureaucrats and corporations. Just kind of my thought.
Yeah.
Manlia, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great night.
Keep up the fight. And look, you know, at the end of this, you know, nobody, as someone who has been on strike during my lifetime, nobody wants to be in that position. Nobody wants to be in the position where you cross that line and you're out on the street, and you're basically in this day and age, you can be fired. And you're going to fight and get your job back at some point, but it could be a huge financial commitment. But at the end of the day, I think she hit on it perfectly. It's that moment when you can't afford it that you absolutely have to do it. And as we've been talking about, I think we're getting to those points. And the fact that you're seeing so many teachers, so many healthcare workers, so many, you know, social service workers, you know, public sector workers now taking to the streets and saying, you know what, especially in states that have historically been anti-worker, anti-union, in you know, right-to-work states like Arizona and in Kentucky. The fact that they're leading the charge here, I think, is incredibly telling. And I've been saying for years, the labor movement will turn around when the most articulate, those teachers, step forward and start saying, you know, why it is we need to have the right to strike, why it is that they're out and doing what they're doing. Good on them, and I wish them the best of luck. Sad stuff. Gonna take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Controversial.